a moment in time when you're so broken that you just absolutely don't think life goes on anymore. I mean, I'm done. There isn't, my kids are grown. Everything's taken care of. I can, but what I was able to do after I finally got the license plate done and got my psyche back where I was dealing with it some, I wrote Bill a letter and thanked him for giving me my freedom, because I realized that up until that moment, in the world of medicine in this area, everything was Bill and Gladys. Now, it had to be Dr. Gladys.
Hey friends, welcome to The Good Life with Michelle Lamoureux, a show for women in midlife who want to live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. I'm your host, Michelle Lamoureux, a self-love coach and the author of Design a Life You Love. And together we're going to be doing just that. Each week I bring on world-class experts, best-selling authors, leading entrepreneurs, and also do solo casts with the intention of inviting you to get connected to what you really desire from your life. This show is produced with love every week. There's inspiration and actionable tips in every episode because I want to see women playing a starring role in their lives instead of living on the sidelines. Be sure to join the Good Life Community newsletter over at thegoodlifecoach.com for more inspiration and tips to live your best midlife. And make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast player. I'm so glad that you're here. Hey friends, I'm so excited for today's conversation. Returning to the show is 103-year-old Dr. Gladys McGarry, who is internationally recognized as the mother of holistic medicine. Following a career in family practice that lasted nearly 80 years, she now has a life consulting practice. Dr. McGarry was the first medical doctor to utilize acupuncture in the United States and founded the Gladys Taylor McGarry Foundation to bridge the gap between holistic and traditional medicine, helping to expand the knowledge and application of holistic principles through scientific research and education. She's the recipient of numerous honors and awards, and her most recent book is called The Well-Lived Life, A 102-Year-Old Doctor's Six Secrets to Health and Happiness at Every Age, which she came on last year to discuss, and this is a part two, and we dive deep into so many interesting topics. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to invite you to follow the podcast on your favorite podcast player. This way, you get all of the latest episodes right to your phone and can look at which topics are most interesting to you and dive in when you're ready to listen. I've had on some world-renowned doctors with more on the way, and the information they're sharing is truly life-changing, and I want to make sure that you have access to it. So on that note, let's get into the conversation with Dr. McGarry, and you can actually listen to the very first episode I did with her right on the show notes page or over at thegoodlifecoach.com. Here we go. Welcome back, Dr. Gladys. I'm so excited to be sitting with you again today.
It's wonderful, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's amazing. Well, happy belated birthday, because when we last spoke, you were 102, and now you're 103.
That's right. And next year, it'll be 104, and so it goes.
That's right. You've got a big vision you've got to accomplish. So I wanted to ask just quickly how you're doing, because I follow you on Instagram. And I saw that on your tricycle, you had an accident.
Yes.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. The tricycle bucked me off. She got stuck in a little rut and just threw me off like a horse would buck a person off. So I landed on my back and broke three ribs.
Wow.
They've healed.
You've healed. That was a few weeks ago, or?
Yeah, I all healed.
You're all healed.
Almost 6 weeks ago.
So your body healed fast.
Yeah. No, I'm here and doing the work that needs to be done and And we'll just keep on doing it because things happen, accidents happen, and bones get broken, and people, you know, you find, you pick up where you are and you go on.
Yes. And you believe that there's lessons in everything. Did you feel that with the situation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was sailing along thinking, you know, feeling so good about being able to ride the tricycle. And now, by permission of my children, who are adult people, they have, I can no longer ride my tricycle. It's been verboten. And besides which, I told her, the tricycle, that she's being punished. So, beat me off.
It's her loss.
Yeah. So well, she's sitting on my back porch and she's being punished.
She's being punished. She should be punished for bucking you off like a horse. You don't deserve that. I love that you're still riding her. And I have to tell you, after the first interview I did with you, I got such an overwhelming response. Everyone could feel the love that you are. You're just this loving presence. And I have a friend who's a doctor who wrote me right away and was like, everything she said spoke to my soul.
Oh, I'm so touched, really. You know, because we need that kind of connection with the world around us. And it's happening. It really is happening. Yes. People love people.
Yes.
People love other things, too. I have a friend, Deanne Hoskin, who is a pigeon that comes to her door. And she named the pigeon Gladys. And so now we figure that the pigeon is taking our word to other pigeons.
Oh, I love it. More healing, but through the animal world. I love it, through the birds.
All right.
Were you always so full of love? Because your book is just, it illuminates love, your essence when you show up, the way you see the world, your hope in humanity. It's all love. Was that always you, or is that something that developed later?
It's love connected with pain. You know, it hasn't been easy. It's not that it's easy to love everybody. It's not easy that it's even to love yourself sometimes. Sometimes I really don't like myself. And I just have to reacquaint myself to the part that I do like and then go on. It's that ability to make the choice. And let me tell you a story about how my mother helped me with this. When I was in third standard, the teacher appointed me as class governor. Well, that was something because 2 years prior, I had, because of my dyslexia and everything, I'd repeated first grade twice. But in this, at this point, she appointed me class governor, and I got to take the story of our third standard out into the whole student body. And that was in the form of a play. And in the play, the frog jumped over the pond. Well, I was the frog because I was taller than the other kids, and because I'd thought, you know, all that stuff, the bad stuff that had happened before. So now I'm the frog. And my mother had made me a frog suit that was green, and she had it dyed green. And so I walked out onto the stage with all my confidence. I knew exactly what I was going to do and exactly how I was going to do it. But just as coming onto the stage, and the front row of the audience, my three older brothers were sitting there. And that, looking at them and recognizing that, threw me off my step just enough so that I didn't jump over the pond. I landed in it.
Oh, no. Oh,
so no. In the whole front of the whole student body, I'm standing in that pond. My suit is fading because my mother had gotten cheap dye, you know. So the suit is fading. I'm crying. I can't move. I'm stuck. This is it. The world's over. I'm done. You know, all this is going on. And I really couldn't move. The teacher had to come up and get me off of the stage. So we go home and we're at the dining room table, and my brothers are telling my mother that how great this was and what a great hot time they had and how everybody was laughing. The whole student body was laughing. I'm trying to give them the devil's eye and nobody's paying attention. So this goes on until finally my mother says, "All right, boys, now you've had your fun. What can we as a family do to help Gladie if this ever happens to her again, so that instead of having people laugh at her, she has them laugh with her?" Now, I have no idea what the family decided they would do, but somehow, as a group, as my mother brought us together, and we did something that has helped me throughout the rest of my life to be able to handle these times that I've been awkwardly tripping on my feet and doing these things happen. But if I'm walking up to the podium and I trip and I stumble, I've already got the audience in my hand. And so I can say something foolish like, "Oh, I've always been a drama queen," or something. But from the very start of the talk, I don't have to introduce anything. I already have the audience with me. So my mother did that for me when I was 8 or 9 years old. So, you know, you look back and see how the hard times that were so hard you thought the world had ended bring you to face to face with how you can deal with it. And for me, it's that kind of a lesson over and over and over again that has allowed me to go on and allowed me to reach to other people who are having the same kind of, you know, times when life is really, really hard.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. First of all, you shared about your mom and you share about her in the book too. It's so beautiful the way she just seemed like the most amazing, loving woman.
She was.
And yeah. I love also that you shared a story from childhood, because I think those little T traumas that happen to us when we're little impact how we show up in the world when, like, I'm 53 now. And there's those little hurts that we have that show up and we're still carrying them.
Absolutely. And it's so nice when parents recognize this. Last week, Taylor Swift is a person who my grandkids really love, and they so their family like her songs and they sing her songs, and she was having some kind of a presentation, and so the family, and this is a family of a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, and the parents and a grandmother are all listening to Taylor Swift. But what they did was push all the furniture back and they were dancing with her. Now, you see, to me, that kind of a memory that these children will have and carry with them for the rest of their lives is going to let them dance at times when life has been hard.
Mm-hmm. This is so profound and beautiful. I love that. I love that. It's true. And those comforting moments, those moments of joy, we can call in when things are hard too.
I call it going down memory lane. There are these times in memory lane which just light up as you come down that lane. And you know, here's my strength. This is the light I'm looking for. This is the health and help that and love and hope and, you know, the rest of the words that go with it.
Yes. Do you have a spiritual practice? Do you talk to God? I'm just curious what keeps that faith.
With my God, I do all the time.
You do?
Oh, yes. I have my affirmations that I use and songs. I have hymns and Indian bhajans that run through my head like a tape. And so, you know, I'll be walking along doing something with this hymn or this bhajan will come shining through, and it helps to keep me focused on the light that I think is so important.
Yes, and that you radiate. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the hard times. You write in the book about how you were diagnosed with breast cancer twice, one in midlife and once in your 90s. So many women are facing these diagnoses. What advice would you give to a woman about how to navigate that information and to move forward? And just, it seems that, you know, in the book you wrote that you didn't let fear, you felt fear, but you didn't let fear dominate. You wouldn't give it the, you didn't feed it.
Yeah, fear is as strong as love if we let it be.
Yes.
And so if fear takes over, well, it was like me in the water pond, you know. Fear took over and I couldn't move.
Yes.
But as we took that fear, and I did move, and my mother changed it from being something horrible to something that's downright funny. It was, you know, it allows you. Let me tell you this quick story.
Please.
I was 99. I'd had my 99th birthday. I was coming out of the grocery store, and I was carrying some groceries and to put them into my car. And an elderly gentleman came up and he sees me picking up my groceries and he said, "Oh, may I help you?" And I said, "Oh, no, I can do this." And he puffs himself up and he says, "Well, I'm 86 years old." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I'm 99. And I marched off and got in my car and sat down on my seat and I said, "You nasty old lady." I mean, he was just a nice old man who was trying to do something very nice. And look what you did. So I was going through the process of, I think you should go into the grocery store and apologize. That's terrible. And then I got to laughing. I got to thinking, "You silly thing. It's just like two kindergarten kids." And by now, he's gone home and he said to his wife, "There was a nasty old lady who came up to me, and this is what happened." And I got to laughing so hard, I couldn't start my car. I mean, I thought this is a real good comedy scene. But it was being able to take that situation, which was really a nasty situation, and make it downright funny. Because don't you know, he went home and said, "There's a nasty old lady that said this to me," and then we got a good kick out of it.
That's such a great story. And I just am seeing the way that you pull on these experiences and you change, you shift it, you shift the energy. Because like you said, we can focus on fear or we can focus on love. So yeah. Is that the message, though, if a woman gets, you know, that scary cancer diagnosis? Any advice to a woman listening who might have been walking that right now?
Absolutely. If cancer becomes the big fear thing that's staring at you, why? Why is it staring at you? How can you take that and make it something that you're going to not just get over? People say get over. Don't try to get over it, because if you do, you stuff it. Try to understand it. Why is it right now? Why am I being stopped in my path so that I have to look at this issue at this time? Because when you get a diagnosis like that, your attention is right at that place, and you have to do something with it. So that's why I made a little suitcase to put it into that I could work with. Because what are you going to do with this diagnosis? I mean, it's in your body. You have it there. You're going to get treated for it, for pity's sake. You don't know just what the treatment's going to be, but you're going to be treated for it. And you'll work with it. But it's not something that, it's something that you have the choice to let it stop you and completely keep you out of functioning, or you can say, okay, now how are we going to deal with this? And then make it a personal choice, which you move forward with and you deal with it, however you have to deal with it.
Yes. And you wrote about the suitcase in your book. So, well, how did you use the suitcase? Just for my audience who haven't, they will read it, but just if they haven't yet.
Yeah, well, I thought of the cancer as being something that needs to be contained while I do this whole process. So I created in my mind a nice little suitcase that was all hand-tooled and a pretty little suitcase. And I said to the suitcase, I want you to get all of the cancer cells within my body into the suitcase. Call all of them so that when they take the family reunion and leave, as there will come a time when they're going to have a really good family reunion, and everybody, every cancer cell in my body is going to jump into that suitcase, and you're going to go off and you're going to have a family reunion or some, I don't know just how I said it, but I talked to the cells in my body. And so that's the way we did it. And with it being that way, somehow it wasn't as scary.
Mm.
Because they were contained and they were going to be able to be there and real, because, I mean, I could deny it. And I knew that the surgery and the rest of the process was going to be done. And so, therefore, it was all contained within the whole story that my body took.
So this is where you engage your mind.
Yes.
And
your ability to choose. We human beings are the only people, or the only living things on this universe who have the right to make our own choices and our own free will.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
We do.
Yes. And I think we forget that. I think sometimes we feel powerless and we let the mind run sort of wild, and we just follow the fear, or we follow all the negative, versus, like you said, taking a moment to have that choice and to also acknowledge, like you said, it's not something you're choosing. It happened, but you have a choice of how you move forward with it.
Right. And you can get stuck. There are times when we all find ourselves stuck. But if we choose to stay stuck, that again is our choice.
That's an important message. Let's talk about getting unstuck. I actually have a part of your book that I wrote down, because a big piece of your book is around getting unstuck and flow and finding your juice and purpose. And you write, if I could distill my life's work and my purpose in writing this book into one sentence, it's this: to be truly alive, we must find the life force within ourselves and direct our energy to it. And then later you also write that we need to create a suitably healthy environment, the body, in which the soul can fulfill its purpose. So talk to us more about this, because I think that's so beautiful, both understanding that there is this life force, that we are souls having this human experience, and we have this vessel, the body. So how do we create that healthy environment, both in the body and bring in that energy that we're here to give to others, that purpose we're here to serve with?
First of all, I think we have to recognize that within us is the physician within us. That's the physician who knows what's going on, how you can deal with it, and how the whole process can progress. If you accept that as the aspect of yourself, which can help you take the next steps that go through, It's like my eldest son, when he started his practice in Del Rio, Texas, he came through Phoenix and he said, "Mom, I'm real scared. I'm going into the world. I'm going to have people's lives in my hands. I don't know if I can handle that." And I said, "Well, Carl, if you think you're the one that does the healing, you have a right to be scared. But if you can understand that it's your job to do the job which you have been trained to do, which is awesome. Orthopedic surgery is hard work and good work, and you've been trained to do that, and you do it well. You take the work that you do, that you understand, that you can work with, and you share that with the doctor within the patient who can understand it in their own words, in their own way, and then present it to themselves in a way that they can deal with it."
Yes.
So that you become colleagues. You and the patient, you have a colleague within that patient. And that patient can understand what, however they understand,
yes,
what it is that you're telling them. And the two of you can work together in this whole healing process.
Yes, yes. I think that's so empowering and so important to remember. And also the medical system feels that they are the ones healing you, but it's really up to you to tap into that physician within, yes, and heal ourselves.
Yeah, really. Well, it's something that I think sometimes needs to be reclaimed. Another quick story.
Please, I love your stories. Please.
I have a friend who's a neurologist in Phoenix here, a good friend of mine, and he was just telling me the other day that he's working as a consultant with the medical school here. And he had this opportunity to work with one of the residents to go in to see a patient. So he made the appointment. They went up to the room. And when he got to the room, the young physician was standing there with a chart. And she was ready to go into the room.
Yes.
And he said, "Well, let's go in." And she said, "Oh, we don't need to." And he says, "What?" She said, "He has Alzheimer's. He won't understand anything we said."
Oh, no.
And he said, "Now, wait a minute." He said, "First of all, he's not the only person in that room." He says, "His wife is in that room. And she's sitting there waiting for us to tell her what she can tell him to do for himself, because she loves him, she understands him, he loves her, they have a language of their own, and what we have to tell them, she can take and lovingly interpret into words that he can take to work with." So it's not, and he said, "Besides that, we have to touch them." And I think a lot of our medical work, I know, that is so focused on killing diseases and getting rid of pain that we lose the patient.
Yeah.
And so often I have patients who come in to say, "I told him my whole story and he didn't hear a thing I said."
Mm. Yeah. I think that's pervasive, unfortunately, in the medical system, the way that it is. The doctors are overwhelmed and overworked, and they've got their little bit of time, and the patients are just looking for the reassurance and information about their path, and there's definitely a big disconnect there. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of mistrust now with dealing with the medical system, the traditional one.
Well, it's because the whole medical system actually has taken on the persona of being a war against disease.
Yes.
And my whole focus is it not working towards to get rid of the disease. That's not my purpose. My purpose as a physician is to work with the patient so that they understand what this disease is. And then I give them the tools, if I can, to work with the process of getting in touch with the physician within themselves so that they can actually deal with it and get rid of it if that's what needs to be done, or cure it, or whatever it is that you are working with. But it's the importance of recognizing who we are as people and what our body is, what our mind and what our spirit are, and how we are a triad on this planet, which can make choices and do the things that need to be done. Yes. And if we can recognize that, life becomes amazingly beautiful.
Yes. And again, the love's there versus the fear, that sense of oneness, yes, and that there's power within us, a spirit running through us.
Right.
I'm curious, though, do you think that the body gets disease? Look, why do we get disease? That might be too broad of a question, but...
Maybe we don't get diseases.
Okay.
Maybe the disease is already there, but our body calls our attention to it.
Mm.
You see, it's something that has developed within our body for a reason.
Yes.
And we don't know the reason, but the body makes us pay attention to it. And as we pay attention to it and begin to see what it's telling us, then we can begin to work with it in a cooperative way, so that our body, mind, and spirit becomes one, and we deal with this as a unit.
And is disease curable, or it depends on that person's path, their life path?
Well, what do you mean by curable, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. So cure, I guess, to be disease-free. So let's say you were diagnosed with, so whether it's a cancer, an autoimmune disease, or something, you know.
I have a good friend living in the front house here just now who has had so many autoimmune diseases that it's amazing, and she is still fully functional because she has looked at each one of these disease processes that her body has presented her with and tried to understand what it is and how what it was going on in her body that allowed her to manifest these so that she could begin to understand them. And as she began to understand herself, she's gotten over all kinds of stuff. I mean, there are doctors in Boston who say, "Why are you here? You know, or why are you still alive?" She says, "Because I choose to be, and I've got work to do." And, you know, she's an amazing... These are people who I call examples of living medicine.
Yes.
They have understood what life is and how it works with the physician within them, and how they can take what the doctor is presenting them with and cooperate with that and work with that in a way that they deal with it. It's an amazing process.
Yeah, this is so important. And I appreciate your perspective, because it's not what we're taught and it's not what we experience. Let's talk about being stuck in midlife. So I know that you believe that we all have something special to bring, and that we need to be paying attention to it and listening for it and not running away from it. You said if we're stuck, it's because we're choosing to be stuck to some degree. So are there any practices? Was there a time in your life where you were stuck, you know, and what did you do to keep moving versus spinning? I kind of sometimes I get this image of like maybe even like a whirling dervish, just spinning, and almost like in a trance, and you need to get momentum again and get moving.
Well, my story about when Bill asked for the divorce is a good one for that.
Yes.
Because I was in the car by myself, screaming at the world. I mean, I was screaming at the universe. It was ugly. It was so terrible. It was so bad. And for me, I was in a position where I was totally stuck. I absolutely could not imagine, after 46 years of working with Bill, creating the American Holistic Medicine, doing all the things that we had done, all of a sudden, going back to my home, which was going to be totally empty except for my dog, because Bill was asking for a divorce. I actually could not put my mind around it. My heart was broken. I was screaming. I mean, it was really ugly.
Yeah.
Until all of a sudden I pulled off to the side of the road and I thought to myself, in fact, I talked to myself and said, are you going to spend the rest of your life like this? And it was so ugly that I said, no, I don't think so. And then the words came to me, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. My name. And I thought, okay, I'll change my license plate. And instead of being a license plate that is, you know, what it is, it's going to say, be glad. So I went home. I talked it over with a dog. Nice having a dog.
Yes.
And I, the next day, applied for a license plate that said, be glad. And I rode that car with that license plate around for the rest of the time I was in practice in Phoenix, so that every time I went to the car, I had to see it. And when I was in traffic, everybody behind me would have to see that, be glad. So I took that message around with me the rest of the time I was in Phoenix. But it is a moment in time when you're so broken that you just absolutely don't think life goes on anymore. I mean, I'm done. There isn't, my kids are grown. Everything's taken care of. But what I was able to do after I finally got the license plate done and got my psyche back where I was dealing with it, I wrote Bill a letter and thanked him for giving me my freedom. Because I realized that up until that moment, in the world of medicine in this area, everything was Bill and Gladys. Now, it had to be Dr. Gladys. I mean, the Bill wasn't there. I had my freedom. And so really, when I was able to put it in that context, I was able to stand up and do the work that I've been able to do since.
There's three beautiful things that I'm taking away from this. One is, it reminds me of the story you told me with your mother and how she put it into a context that brought you joy again and power, where you took your power back. So you got to the place where you wrote him a letter thanking him for your freedom. The second is that the women listening, so many women are going through divorce right now. So many women I know, it's a time of life that it's happening. It just is. And yeah. So your story is going to bring them so much peace and power. And the third is your license plate. So when I drive around, I always pay attention to the license plates because I think God gives me messages through license plates. So I think it's so sweet that you didn't do it just for you. It's literally bringing tears to my eyes. But you also did it because you knew it would actually maybe bring some joy to somebody else.
Right.
It's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Well, you know what it does? It creates a community.
Yes.
Because, you know, people that see that,
yes,
and pay attention to it, all of a sudden are part of your community. You might not know who they are, but they know who they are and they know what they saw.
Yes. Yes. Sometimes one day I said, God, I just need guidance. Just give me a sign. And I drove out and the license plate was guidance. It was literally guidance without the I, G-U-D-A-N-C. And I was like, okay, I hear. I guess you're paying attention. I'm not alone, which I think we don't want to feel alone. Just out of curiosity, you did some stem cell therapy. Can you tell us about that? What's that for? And I don't know much about it.
Well, it's a developing process, you know. We're just learning about it. And so I have a friend who was a physician who was doing this. And I thought, you know, I'm 102 years old. Maybe my old cells could use some new cells.
Yes.
I got the process done. I haven't noticed any miraculous whatever, but I'm still here.
Yes.
And, you know, so what is it that brought me here? It wasn't the stem cells themselves, but my choice to do that and my choice to keep on working. You know, it's all put in together. It's like the tricycle. You are a body, mind, and spirit.
Yes. Yes. You're adventurous. 86 years old, you went to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be afraid to travel there at 86, and you went to help others. Just tell us about that experience, if you would. And then also, what's your mindset? Because clearly you see life from a perspective that I think keeps that vitality flowing versus blocks it.
Well, I have a brother. I had a brother, he's passed over, Carl, who started an organization called Future Generations around the world, which is really a continuation of the work that my parents did when they went out to India. Not specifically, but it was in the realm of that. And so he had been working with women in Afghanistan whose maternal mortality rate was higher than anybody else in the world, any other women in the world.
Wow.
And they couldn't find the answer because, first of all, they had no way of contacting these women. They weren't allowed to talk to them. Men weren't allowed to talk to women. So I was just ready to retire from my practice of medicine. And Carl said, well, here, I've got a job for you.
Wow.
Told me that if I could come to Afghanistan and work with these women, maybe we could find the answer to it. And so he created a way in which we had a possibility of we invited 35 Afghani women from 10 different villages.
Wow.
And we had to ask for them to let us talk to their women. And of course, the men said no. But Dr. Shukriya, who was an Afghani woman physician who was amazing.
Yes.
In really the people, she was considered a bad person because she talked to men and all that.
Yes.
So she said to the men, well, you know, the women we want to talk to are your mothers-in-law, not your wives. Oh, you can have them. Well, of course, they were the ones who'd had the babies. They were the ones who knew the stories. It was exactly what we needed. And so we had these women, and they told us their stories, and we found out why it was that this was going on. When the women got pregnant, they were taken off of all food that had calcium in it, like carrots, yogurt, and so on. So they went through that whole process. And when they went into labor, They were not given anything to eat or drink. So now you've got a starved woman who has been not able to get enough calcium during the pregnancy. And when they talk to us about being in labor, they would do this, which is hypocalcemic tetany. In other words, their muscles were in spasm, where they were trying to give, and they couldn't push the baby out because they were too weak. So somebody from the outside had to push that baby out. In the process of doing that, they had a ruptured uterus, they had a torn pelvis, you know, all kinds of bad fistulae. And it was just, it was awful. And so as we talked about this to these women, one of the women said to the other, to the others, who in the world told us all this? You know, some the men did. So, okay. Well, I told them about how a sperm comes up the vagina, up into the uterus, you know, and that every egg, each egg gets to choose which sperm it wants. And these women said, what? You know, their shoulders went back. And, you know, all of a sudden, they saw that they had some choice in this whole process.
How beautiful.
You know, it was a wonderful time. And within 3 months, the maternity board began to change. It didn't completely change, you know, but it began to change.
You've made such impact, and we know that you've got the Village for Living Medicine as part of your 10-year plan. Tell us where, you told us a little bit about it the last time we spoke. Tell us how things are going, and how can we support it? What can we do?
Well, keep doing the things that make you and your community part of the loving human race. And I truly I truly believe that we as human beings now are beginning to reach for our true humanity. Because I have this idea. Now, this isn't a theology, it's nothing to preach, but I have this idea that when God, whoever God is to any of us, created the universe, he, she said to us human beings, oh, this is perfect. Everything is exactly the way it should be. There's nothing wrong with the earth and the universe. It's just perfect. And now I will create the human being, which is the only living being on this whole universe that has free choice and free will. And I therefore give you dominion over the whole thing. And we, in our arrogance, thought he said dominance. And so we took over. Oh boy. You know, we're in charge of this. And look what we've done to poor Mother Earth.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
So I think it's time for us to really accept the fact that we really do have free choice. And we really do have the opportunity to do something to reclaim our true humanity, which says, no, we love Mother Earth, and we're going to work with her, and we're going to help her reclaim who and what she is.
You are such a beautiful soul, Dr. Gladys. I could talk to you for hours, and I'm so honored that I'm having the opportunity to sit with you again. I want to invite all the women listening today, the Dr. Gladys's book, The Well-Lived Life. It says 102-year-old doctor, 6 secrets to health and happiness at every age, because that's when you wrote it. It's out in paperback. And so everybody needs to get a copy of it, and they need to share this interview, because it's so empowering and so important to understand what you're saying, because It's just so profound, but the messaging, the way you communicate it is so accessible. Is there anything I didn't ask you today, Dr. Gladys, that you want to make sure the women listening with take away from our conversation?
Oh, there are a lot of things in the book that, you know, you don't have time. It takes a lifetime to ask the questions. So whatever the people are having places that they want to share with other in your own community, share what it is. It's love that's a great healer. Love and life are the two essential aspects of healing. The rest is, you know, you put it together, but love and life are the aspects of healing that are important.
Yes. And I'm going to link in the show notes over at thegoodlifecoach.com, the very first interview I did with Dr. Gladys, because we dove into so many of these, the six secrets from the first conversation. And I appreciate you sharing more of your journey and also your heart with us today. So head over to thegoodlifecoach.com or on your podcast player, you're going to see a link to Dr. Gladys's website, her Instagram, her YouTube, her Facebook. Get connected to her and all the work that she's doing, and be sure to pick up a copy of her book now in paperback. And thank you, Dr. Gladys. It's so lovely to be with you today.
Thank you for creating your community. People will be talking to today.
Thank you so much.
God bless you all.
God bless you.
Love you.
Love you too, Dr. Gladys. Hey, friend, I have one request before we sign off today. If you've gained any value from any of the interviews that you've tuned into, would you take just 1 minute and leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts? It's actually how more women can find the show, and I want to continue growing a community of women who are loving themselves and living full on. So thank you for all of your support, and I look forward to being back with you next week. Bye for now.
This podcast is presented for entertainment and educational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to be a substitute for medical, mental health, or other professional advice. Seek out your trusted healthcare provider or other qualified professional for all matters dealing with your health and well-being. Any opinions or information provided by a guest are their own and not those of Michelle Lamoureux or the company.